So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the news.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Les, I am hereby declaring tonight Heenan Night on Wrestling Weekly.
By God, Doc, you're the producer. You declare anything. You can declare Doc Young Night if you like.
It actually was going to be Doc Young Night until we got Bobby Heenan. Because actually tomorrow, Les, is a beautiful day. It's my birthday.
Is it tomorrow, your birthday?
Tomorrow is my birthday.
And you will be?
I will be 32.
Oh, my God. Ancient Mariner.
Yeah, I'm getting up there.
I feel bad because I'm only 33 years older than you. Oh, well, but whatever, whatever.
Well, hopefully I can...
Well, happy birthday, Doc. A day early.
Well, thank you, Les. Thank you.
The Maserati you'll find sitting in your driveway with a red ribbon around it is from the...
It's not for me.
Yeah. WRN for all your great service and hard work.
Sweet. All right. We got a lot of good stuff to get to tonight. Like we said at the top of the show, Bobby Heenan is going to be our very special guest.
You know what? I'm going to mention some negative things because you know me in details. But I want to say, if you watched Raw last night, please don't tell me the art of the work is gone because the Rick and Mick show kicked ass.
Yeah.
And I don't know how any nice city. And I was talking to Dave Meltzer on email about it on our computers, and he said, "Did you see how?" I said, "Yeah." And you know what? And somebody will write today. Gee, they obviously didn't get over because those people didn't yell and scream. Those people didn't know what they were shooting or not, and that is the whole art of the work, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. That is what this business is about, is sucking people in and making them stop and think, are they really mad at it? You know, I mean, they did it, brother, and it was well done. I mean, it really was. It was the best part of the show. Actually, I think there was some wrestling on it at 2 hours, or 3 minutes.
There was some wrestling?
I think so, yeah, between commercials.
Mm.
You know what? And the two matches that might have been pretty good, I don't know, didn't see enough of them. Honestly, the timing on them, that was the sad part because in the three-way with Benjamin and Carlito and Nitro, they went to commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Umaga and the Michaels, they went into commercial hell, a couple minutes in?
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. But, mentioning what Flair and Foley did, and it was their passion, and yes, they have some serious, but they're professionals, and they're going to, but they used what they have to do something. And then you had DX and the McMahons and Orton Knows Best, which were all forced because they were scripted.
Right.
And there was very little reaction to any of that stuff. And again, I'm not ripping, but it's just, again, part of this business is about, improvisation. It's about doing it. What you feel at the time. I can't write for you, I can, but it don't work real well. And when I mention about... Gosh, these writers need a vacation. You know, they're working too hard. One of the worst things, and it's not just on their show, it's on everybody's show, is run-ins. I'm so tired of run-ins.
You can almost feel it coming.
Well, you know, it's listen, years ago, I was told, and I still play this, if when things get hot in the ring and everybody turns to the ramp or to the aisleway or to the dressing room door, whatever the case may be, you've got a problem.
Right. You're not doing your job.
You know, and the other thing is, if 16 guys come to the ringside, guess what? Somebody's going to jump. You know, it's just, it's what I'm saying, it's laziness. It's sad. It, you know, it goes back to what Pete Doyle said last week. Everybody's accepting a mediocrity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the one thing that, and I, when I caught it, and I said, Doc's going to really be upset with me tomorrow night when I lead on this. But, hey, we can't think of anything to do. Let's arrest Hunter for having Cuban cigars. The problem is the stupid cops left the evidence in the dressing room. They did.
I didn't even notice that.
See, but it's the first thing I saw because that's the way I've been educated in this business. I thought, well, you damn fools. I'm not a real cop, but I know enough to know that if you don't leave the evidence...
That's funny.
Hey, you take him down, you book him and say, we're arresting him for having contraband. What do you have? He had illegal Cuban cigars. Where are they? Gosh, guess we left him back at the arena. Come on.
Maybe that's how he'll get out of this whole
mess. Get your stuff together. I won't say the word so you don't have to edit it.
Cool.
Okay?
I appreciate that, Les.
But you see my point?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure somebody else caught this, you know? I don't know.
One thing
I want to pop before, you know, we've been on going on, and we've had good guests the last few weeks. I haven't really. I work for a living, or try. I try my best. Dr. Tom and I are going to Denver September 8th and 9th for a two-day training camp for Altitude Pro Wrestling Academy and Fusion Pro Wrestling, which is putting the show on. We're going to be staying at the Red Lion out there, and that's in their ballroom. Is where we're going to do the two-day camp, Friday and Saturday, and on Saturday night they're going to have a show. And if anybody's interested in going to the show, working, training with us at the camp, whatever, they can go to altitudeprowrestling.com and check out the information there and stuff. But I've been making this will be my third trip to Denver for these guys, and you know, it's a fun time and. And we'll be productive, too, I believe.
Is it harder for them to work out in Denver being so high? You know,
there's
less
air.
You know
what? I mean, of course, I don't go out and try to run 40-yard dash or anything.
Right.
Not at my age, anyway. But I don't notice it so much. I guess maybe if I were out playing football or, you know, or running the bases in baseball or something, I probably would. I don't know. Those guys are kind of used to it, I think. You know, the neat thing about Fusion and Altitude are, you know, in the day when there's an independent wrestling organization on every street corner, there's a pseudo-wrestling school in everybody's backyard, this is the only wrestling school in the entire state of Colorado, and they are the only independent promotion.
Wow.
Yeah. And Jeff and Billy that run the thing... honestly, sometimes they're looking, you know, and it's a great city. I really like it out there. And if you're an independent wrestler and want to change the scenery, you know, to go out there and train, they're very serious about their training. Jeff or Sarge is his nickname, trained under, spent a year and a half with me here in Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah.
And he's forever still learning, and he, you know, he's old school, and he's very serious about getting the basics in for the guys and everything. But it's, you know, we're going to have a good time out there September 8th and 9th.
Excellent. AltitudeProWrestling.com. Check it out, guys.
Yeah.
I want to get back into Raw for a little bit. And you know what really, really disappointed me was that Orton Knows Best could have been a classic. It could have been something really good.
Here's the problem, Doc, again. You know, I was sitting here thinking... You remember a few years ago when Rock and Mick went out and did their stand-up, you know, their Billy Crystal, Robin Williams shtick or whatever it was, right?
This Is Your Life?
Yeah, okay.
Right.
And back then, nobody was writing for these two guys, right? I mean, they probably had bullet points. They probably had points to make on a pay-per-view. I don't remember. It's been too long ago.
Right.
But the point was, it was the chemistry. It was the moment, it was the time, and it worked. Now, if you remember, they booked them and plotted and planned to do this a second time, and it didn't fly.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, proves my again. You know, that's the whole thing. This is listen. Randy Orton is one of the future people in this business. He's a good athlete. He's a lot of good things, but he's not The Rock. He's not Mick Foley. He's not Ric Flair. He's not even Shawn Michaels. And when it comes to being glib and play on, and the whole thing was just so, like, okay, you know. I mean, it's like, if I were one of these writers, if I were the owner of the company, if I were whoever's making, you know, the head of the creative department, whatever, what can Doc Young do? But let's, more importantly, let's look at what he can't do.
And hide it.
Exactly. Very good, doctor. But, you know.
I'm learning.
Yeah, you are. You know, if we do this another 30 years, if I live that long, you know. but seriously, you know, I mean, that's the deal, see, and that's what I see these things, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, whatever. It's just, but like the whole DX thing, they have pushed that so hard that it's really, there's nothing left, so much, you know, and it's not spontaneous any longer, right?
Mm-mm.
It's a whole planned out shtick with pictures and the whole thing, and then like Vince and Shane standing in the ring last night, it's like, okay. Vince and Shane are standing in the ring.
Right.
What did they do? They stood in the ring. Right? So it's, but, I mean, the whole arrest thing. Have we done this 4,000 or 5,000 times?
Right.
You know, it's just, it's, again.
I was waiting for the Orton promo to come on, and Orton would be in this mansion with the Hogan family, and he'd be slapping them around and grounding the kids and, you know, drinking beer or whatever. I thought it was going to be really good, and it was just garbage. It was garbage.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, it just didn't. Well, Randy's not a comedian.
Yeah, if they spoofed on, you know, the show itself and reality shows as a whole, I think they could have said something and really, you know,
well,
entertain some people
now,
with it.
Now, when DX, the whole McMahon thing that shtick that Triple H and Shawn did, it was went too long.
Right.
But in short burst, it was good. A few years ago when New Age Outlaws and DX, who did they play? They parodied somebody, whoever it was. You know, but again, you know what? Whether you like it or you don't, these guys are not professional stand-up comics.
Right.
Right? They're professional wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me to another point. Pete was mentioning about the fans. And again, man, this business wouldn't be anything without the fans, but it becomes... I'm reading Joe Hamilton's book, who's going to be on the show with us in a couple weeks.
The Assassin.
Assassin Behind the Mask. Yeah, I just got it yesterday, and I'm already two or three chapters in. But, and I'm not going to read it to you now, but his foreword makes mention of some of this, too. But everybody's an expert. Everybody knows more about our business than we do.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say we, I'm talking about the guys who actually take bumps, not those who buy tickets or watch it on television. And when I say that, you know, like I've got the Dodgers and the Reds on right now, and I've played some, you would call it sandlot baseball. Here we have what's called a knothole system, and it's not Little League. And I played from age 8 or age 7 through age 16. But I'm sure not, I consider and pretend, but I'm not going to call and say, hey, the Reds should have done this and the Dodgers should have done it. And maybe I'm not because I have been a professional athlete and I understand, right?
Right, right.
But anyway, I read a review about one of the ECW shows over the weekend up in New England. And it was a fan, and he was just voicing his opinion, right? But he said about one or two matches, he said, and, you know, they actually used wrestling holes and they stayed in the ring. And I thought I should email the guy and apologize profusely. Hey, listen, man, I'm really sorry that two professional wrestlers at a professional wrestling show actually used wrestling holes.
He said it in a negative way?
And yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, well, what he wanted us, thumbtacks or baseball bats, and I don't, excuse me, oops, I said that. But that's what it is.
Right.
Right? Get a Playboy. Go to the bathroom, man. You know, no, but what I'm saying, you know, this the time of the business is there's a diverse thing. You go to a Ring of Honor show, there's the flip-flop and fly, you know, tag team scrambles where the 140-pound guys fall on their heads and stuff. Cool, if that's what you're into, it's there, right?
Right.
The main event, on the other hand, is professional wrestling. There's psychology and an art to this business. And believe it or not, you can stay in the ring and actually use wrestling holds if you know how, and draw the people in. And here's the other thing. Why rip on these guys? They're doing what they're told.
Right.
You know? It's like if I sit here and watch a guy steal a base, it's because one of the first base or third base coach gave him the steal sign, not because he went into business for himself.
Right.
Right? So one of the agents, whoever it happened, God forbid that it might have been Dean Malenko, one of the best technical wrestlers in the last 40 years, for Christ's sake, that might have told him to actually go out and use a few holes, and I guess this guy would rip on Dean, too, if he were out there. But, you know, they're just doing what they're told. It's a business, you know. Guys, that's like me saying, hey, Ken Griffey just hit the baseball. Well, yeah, Les, it's a baseball game. What was he supposed to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
Dribble it and throw it up in the stands? Come on, you know?
Yeah,
I'm an expert. You know, and I realize the diversity, but I also know when I go to Ring of Honor, I got to sit through the stuff that I'm not really interested in to get to the stuff that I am,
mm-hmm.
right? And I understand that, some guys would rather be acrobats than professional wrestlers, and there's a place for them. But I get tired of hearing the know-it-alls knock actually what wrestling is, professional wrestling.
Right.
You know, it's just, and that's my soapbox today. We'll let Bobby Heenan get on his soapbox later. He's better at it than I am.
And he probably will.
He's better at it than I am.
One thing I got to say, though, about one more thing about Raw last night. Somebody did steal the whole Orton No Best Show, and his name was Sweet and Sour Larry Sweeney, baby. Woo! Yes.
Who's Larry Sweeney?
Larry Sweeney, Chikara Wrestling.
Oh,
the one who played Nick.
Playhouse. Yeah, I've never seen Chikara.
Playhouse.
And no, I haven't. And two or three of my friends who have said, please don't watch it.
yeah, you probably wouldn't like it, actually.
No, well, is it a parody of professional wrestling? Tell me, Doc.
A little bit.
Come on, it's more than a little bit. I've been told the stories. You're trying to diss me now. You're trying to BS me. You're trying to BS a BSer, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yes, I've been conning people for a lot longer than you've been alive, son. No, it's what the guy goes. Some guy goes out and has a match with the refrigerator, or his whole match is there is no match. I've heard the stories, man. And no, I'm not interested. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, although there are a couple guys there that I know actually can work, you know, and they do probably when they get away from that. And why they do that, I have no clue. But it's cool. I don't have to buy a ticket, so it ain't no big deal.
Right, absolutely.
Right? And then if they're entertained by it, if they get off with it, and the 50 people that go see it, that's cool too.
Let's go ahead and get into some news, Les.
Okay.
Some news going on this
week. None of this is news? You mean we haven't? Go ahead, Doc. I'm trying to crank the chat room up so they're ready for Bobby.
Absolutely.
And somebody's saying the old man's on a roll again tonight.
They're just saying stuff like, keep preaching and you should write a book.
You know what? A couple of people have met. Well, Scott Teal, who co-authored the Assassin's book and also Ole Anderson's and also Jim Dillon's has been saying that to me. In fact, he said it today. We were talking on the phone. I said, maybe. I don't know.
You should. I'd buy it.
Would you?
Well, actually, I'd book you for a free copy, actually.
We could sell it to you for the cost to cover all the publishing, maybe. And my wife wouldn't buy one. She'd force me to give her one. She, bless her heart. But anyway, go on with the news.
WWE has learned that Bobby Lashley has been medically cleared to compete. 2 weeks ago, after his annual exam, he was found to have elevated enzymes of the liver.
Yeah.
Because of the medical risks, of course, associated with the condition, Lashley was forced to sit out Great American Bash, but will be returning.
Yeah.
Andrew, the moderator of the message board on Matt Hardy's official website, has issued the following statement regarding recent news that Hardy will be pulled from WWE and SmackDown. Says, hello, everybody. Just a little update on Matt for the sake of killing any rumors and assumptions as to his status. Simply enough, when Matt was given the standard blood test, they found dormant trace elements of the staph infection, which plagued him many months ago. After a light antibiotic treatment and a few weeks off to properly rest, Matt will be back. Feel free to send him your thoughts, possibly a get well thread. Hope you're all making the most of your summer.
Cool.
So there's
you know, I said last week, I'm all for this, man, because, you know, if it saves one life, or just keeps, you know, I mean, that's the other thing. Fans got to understand the grueling schedule these guys are keeping.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff they're asking them to do on an every night and on a nightly basis is...
asking a lot.
It's not physically possible.
Right.
And they need a rest. They need to take, you know, they need to recoup. And then that's, I'm all for the wellness thing. You know, as I mentioned last week, my friend Luther Lindsay passed. We watched him pass away, and maybe we wouldn't have had, you know, their mental wellness program in place. And about my own hip, you know,
right,
coming close to where if my liver had ruptured, I wouldn't be here to rant and rave, and then you guys wouldn't have anything to entertain you. But
that's exactly true.
But anyway, I'm glad that the wellness program is in place. I'm glad that they are being very strict with it. I'm all for that.
I am too. Speaking of needing to relax and recuperate, Tatanka has joined the list of recent stars of the SmackDown brand to be removed from active duty for the next 30 days for personal reasons. Tatanka worked the SmackDown taping on last Tuesday and will now go on the DL. He joins a growing list of SmackDown stars who've been taken off the road in the last couple weeks, including Mark Henry, Super Crazy, Kid Cash, Bobby Lashley, The Great Khali, and Matt Hardy.
You know, very quickly, this may be our business because it is a show, because it is a work, is possibly more stressful than professional baseball or football or basketball, because there you're definitely judged by your talent.
Mm.
You know, if you're batting 300 and at this point in the game you've got 25 home runs and 85 RBIs, you're pretty sure to start,
yeah,
right? And you're going to get a good, and as long as you hang in there, you're going to get a good contract. That's not always the case in professional wrestling, and there's too much politics, which is maybe the you know, the dark side of our business. And with only a couple companies where you can actually make a living, it becomes even darker because the politics become so much more you know, important and prevalent.
Right.
So it is forget the physical stress; it is emotionally and mentally stressful to work in this industry, and you know. It's guys need a break, you know. And of course, as you know, it's, I don't care if it's selling insurance, you know, some people hold up better than others.
Mm. Another story. This one you might be interested in. The Wrestling Observer reports that Doug and Danny Basham were the two security guards under the masks on ECW last Tuesday.
Cool. Both those guys, they both started with Danny Davis and Corny,
mm-hmm,
down in OVW. Both are good talents. Why they're not being utilized without the goofy face mask and stuff, I have no idea. But they're both good guys. There's a lot of good talent there that could be utilized out front. Danny's good too, but I'm especially high on it as a technical wrestler. And, you know, I read somewhere that... Eugene and Rob Conway had a good match. I hope so. Christ, they've been wrestling each other. You know, but I mean, they're both good talents too. It's just a matter of who's out. Well, there's a good example too. And I don't mean this as a personal knock, but the four guys we're talking about here can work the butts off of Chris Masters. But it's a matter of who gets the push and who gets put in that particular situation.
Right.
You know, so... I heard that too, and I hope they're out there. They're both good boys. They're both very good talents.
A poster for the WWE Survivor Series this November has been making the rounds around the internet, showing a DX logo over an NWO logo. WWE has confirmed this poster is not real and was something created by a fan. Don't believe the hype, guys.
Yeah, okay.
Fake stuff going around.
Well,
you can do a lot with Photoshop these days.
Who would it be?
Yeah.
I mean, Nash is under contract at this point to TNA, right?
Right.
So, I don't know.
But, yeah, not real stuff. We're going to get into the ratings from last week real quick, and then, of course, Bobby Heenan going to be on the program for an extended amount of time tonight.
Yep.
On Heenan Night. On Wrestling Weekly. Of course, July 24th edition of Monday Night Raw drew a final 3.8 cable rating with a 6 share. The first hour was a 3.5, while the second hour drew a 4.0. That's a slight drop from last week's 4.0. Of course, last Tuesday's edition of ECW on Sci-Fi drew a 2.4 cable rating with a 4 share. That number's up from the previous week's 2.2 and back to where it was a couple of weeks ago. This week's rating was bumped by the, of course, 3.0 overrun. So it was a pretty good overrun for the main event.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, while we're on the TV thing, you know, I was saying last week about the deal here with the new network, right?
Right.
And I was talking to somebody today who said that they thought that, well, you know, that particular station, WKRC or Channel 12, CBS affiliate, certainly didn't put the money out to acquire this other network to have it hidden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're under the impression that, and this person works in, not, I mean, like, he's not an executive with one of the big TV companies here, but he does work in the industry, and he's under the impression that there's already some movement in the works to clear it onto the regular cable system or the regular, you know, television if you're not on cable. Because obviously, you know, if they're spending a lot of money to get this network, then they're wanting to get it out there because that's the only way they can sell advertising.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope so, because I'm not interested in spending more money on more cable tiers.
Oh, yeah.
Quite frankly.
The July 27th edition of TNA Impact drew a final 0.8 cable rating. That's the same rating that the show drew the previous week. This is likely where TNA is expected to settle in.
Yeah.
Until UFC comes back with programming in August. Which would air right before Impact.
You know what? I think Jarrett's promos the last couple, especially this last one, was very solid, because it wasn't just yeah. You know, I mean, he was being an athlete, you know, a veteran athlete who's interested in hanging on to his title, and it came across that way.
Right.
You know, whatever that means, I'm not sure either, but. You know, the guy, again, it's not that he's a bad talent. It's just that I think he's overworked and overexposed as a champion.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think that, on another note, maybe Christian should probably go heel at this point.
Well, I you know what? I get a feeling he's going that way, you know.
I would hope so, because he does better that way. He does better when he's the smart aleck. He's not this, like, intense guy like Sting is. It doesn't come across very well, and it seems like he's acting.
Yeah, you know, I just tend to believe that that's where they're building it. And, of course, I don't know. No one's told me that. I don't know that for sure. But I get that feeling. I think that's where they're going with the Naturals.
Right.
As far as heels, too.
With Shane Douglas leading the charge? Yeah, probably.
You know, I tend to think that direction.
The July 28th edition of WWE's Friday Night SmackDown drew a final 2.2 broadcast rating with a 4 share. That translates to about 3.4 million viewers. Keep in mind that SmackDown was preempted in New York.
You know, well, it's on at 2 a.m. here, and you can't get
yeah.
it on our cable system.
And it comes on at 2 a.m. in Cincinnati, guys.
Yeah, exactly, which doesn't do any of us any good that's on Time Warner hookup. You know what? And I was reading some spoilers for this Friday night, and some of the stuff going on, I honestly would like to see, you know, Finlay, and I would like to see Finlay and Regal's matches.
Yeah.
You know, but I am unable to do that.
Yep.
At least at this point.
It's too bad.
You're right.
It should be noted that Maven was backstage.
Yeah, I heard that. Yes.
At the Raw and SmackDown taping in East Rutherford. Yeah. According to reports, Maven is believed to have been sending out feelers to maybe, you know, get to work with WWE again.
Well, you know, I heard when he was on the reality show on VH1 that,
Surreal Life.
Yeah, he was looking for, a shot at the movies, which we all are, right?
Yes. Wrestling's just a stepping stone.
Well, you know, here's a guy. I had him in my camp, when he was the first winner of Tough Enough. And I've told Al, I said, you guys couldn't have picked a better. I mean, personality-wise, he worked hard. He was a good kid. He could have rubbed everybody the wrong way, and he didn't. I was real pleased with him. It's just that he was never really given a shot.
Right.
You know? And I don't know that to this day he's the guy, he's going to be the headline of pay-per-view. But again, the thing I think that slips through the writers or the people involved in controlling creative is that, you know, it's like a good championship baseball or basketball or football team. In part, is that because of the depth of their roster. And I want to build good matches from start to finish.
Right.
You know, and so much, like the TV shows you want, it's like so much of this just thrown together. And guys like Maven or the cruiserweights, you know, we could sit here and cite a lot of things, you know, given the opportunity, can be very entertaining and fill the time far more productively than the diva musical chairs, which I know you gave a 5-star rating to.
We're not going to go there.
All right, we won't go there.
We don't have any time for that.
Gotcha.
we're going to take a quick break, guys. When we come back, the man of the night is going to be here, Bobby the Brain Heenan, here on Wrestling Weekly. You're listening to Doc Young and Les Thatcher. We'll be right back after this, guys. Stick around.
Wrestling Weekly will return to all the fun right after this.
What are you doing? You having fun?
I'm having a blast.
So many of these wrestling websites nowadays strongly promote their pay-per-view play-by-plays as if they were something unbelievably special. The problem is that they are not special. In fact, they're all the same. Nothing separates one from the other, and if you've seen one, you've seen them all. However, there is one site that has original play-by-play that's different from all the rest. 4WWrestling.com, a proud supporter of the Voice of Wrestling radio show, invites you to witness the ultimate play-by-play experience live during every WWE pay-per-view. And if you're asking what makes them so different, well, 4W-Wrestling.com is the only site to put up pictures from the actual pay-per-view as it happens. You see what's taking place on the pay-per-view instead of just reading about it. If you're not buying a pay-per-view, but you're looking for the next best thing, 4W-Wrestling.com. Online wrestling evolved.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? Do you absolutely have to know all about their history? You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, but an obsession, check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
Hi, my name is Adam Newdelman, but I play the Phantom on the radio. I'm here to remind you that, oh, screw that, my book, Mysteries of Wrestling South, is available at finer bookstores everywhere. That stupid fake voice, I hate it. I wrote a book along with Sir Adam Kleinberg called Mysteries of Wrestling. It has the questions that you wanted answered. Why does Steve Austin hate Jeff Jarrett? Are referees really blind and stupid and dumb? Who is actually the toughest wrestler in the business outside of the ring? Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kamala. We get down and dirty with insider facts you've never read about anywhere else. So what are you waiting for? It makes a great stocking stuffer. You're too short, you buy three of them, you get tall, you just stand on them. Mysteries of Wrestling Solved by ECW Press, written by Sir Adam Kleinberg and Adam the Phantom Newdelman, available everywhere. It's done. The plug is done. I'm done. I didn't sell it well enough. There's naked pictures of China in there. Okay? Thank you.
Here's the latest news and information on total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip is just one click away. Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, The Best of Raven, Enigma, The Best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, The Best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total non-stop Live Action Wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back with you at Wrestling Weekly. Les.
Yes.
We have a very special guest.
We certainly do. You know, we talk about paying your dues in this business, and I have watched tonight's guest go from entry level in 1963 to legend and Hall of Fame status in 2006. He's been a friend for a long time, and God knows he's one of the top managers of all time in this business. Let's give a big Wrestling Weekly welcome to my good friend Bobby Heenan. Bobby, how you doing?
Good, Les. Thank you very much. I think that was 19...
I got you. You know what? We do go back to 63.
Buster's jacket.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you, when I first met you, you were helping Dick around the arena, and you were working at the Ford dealership in Indianapolis, right?
Yeah. I was working for a Ford dealership, and I was carrying jackets and putting out posters and summer programs, selling beer and whatever I get my hands on to sell. As far as I'm here to heal, I learned how to sell.
You know, I was thinking today with you being our guest tonight, and one of the things that's really missing in the business today is characters. And we had a lot of guys back then like Bruiser and Moose Cholak and Les Ruffin to entertain us, even if the houses weren't big.
Oh, yeah, we had Frank Hickey, too. And don't forget, we had the greatest heel of all time.
Who? You broke up on me on that one. Doc, are we shorting out somewhere?
No, it's something on his line. We're losing you there, Bobby.
Are we on his cell?
No.
Okay. Are you with us, Bob? Can you hear us all right?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, he's right.
Uh-oh. We may have to take a break and give him a call back there.
Well, I think that's... If Bobby, if you can hear us, we're going to take a real quick break and call you back and try to get a better connection because we've got a bunch of people here wanting to hear...
Can you hear me at all?
Oh, there he is.
Now he's back. Did you go to the bathroom or something and just came...
No, my wife didn't pay the bill.
Okay. But, you know, that's the one thing that I do miss in today's corporate structure of the business is the characters that always kept the dressing rooms loose.
Oh, my God, the Frank Hickeys?
Yep.
And people like that, and there was always somebody bitching and somebody happy. And I mean, it was just like, let's make a deal, but you didn't have to pay to get in. It was somebody asked me once, what is wrestling like? I said, it's like being in high school with money.
You know, you managed, I mean, some of some of the greatest. Nick Bockwinkel, probably some of these young guys, when we say he was a wrestling heel, they're not even sure what that is.
No, they don't even know what wrestling is. You know, it's not their fault. That's because everything just changes, and the business is different than it was. You know, the guys in the 40OS, they don't understand the business in the 50s in the same way whenever you're like that. I'm just glad I got to do what I did and came out of it not too badly busted up and alive and got to send my daughter to college and bury my mother and my grandmother with the money I made off this business, and I'm a very lucky person.
You know, your second book, when I read it, was your uncle, I think. That was the hustler, the con artist sort of guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so did a lot of your personality come from him? Did you play off a lot of things that you picked up from him as a kid?
No, I never met him. He was gone by 1930. They were working for him in 9 states, so he was gone by then. I was on my own since I was about 13 years of age, and I didn't want to go to school. I wanted to watch TV. I loved wrestling, and this is what I wanted to do.
And it sounded like me at 13. I didn't want to go to school.
No. I said to me, did you ever have any trouble with the teacher molesting you? I said, yes, in night school. She was 41. I was 47.
Wow.
I'll tell you another guy that I know you were close with and God, what a Ray Stevens was not just a great guy, but a tremendous worker and hell bent for election every day of his life, right?
Oh my God, Ray was the best. He was, you know, the greatest talent in the business was probably Hulk Hogan. But when you talk about matches in the ring, was Patterson and Stevens. I mean, there was nobody like Ray Stevens. And Ray used to tell me, he married a woman wrestler who was about 10 years older than him.
Right.
And I asked him, I said, do you ever have a problem with her? He said, I have her on her knees twice a week begging. I said, did you hit her? He said, oh, no. She told me to come out from under the bed and fight like a man.
So, there was a guy, you know, they talk today about people being adrenaline junkies, but motorcycles, rodeo, race car. I mean, if it got your adrenaline up, Ray did it, didn't he?
You know the funny thing about Ray, he would do all that. He would ride horses, he'd ride bulls, motorcycles, and him and Boxmaker got their license to fly an airplane, but he wouldn't go on a Ferris wheel or anything with a carny. He was scared of that stuff.
Wow.
I don't know why.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And a hell of a bump take. I mean, we talk about the bumps these kids take today, but Ray was probably the forerunner of them, and that's we're talking 40-some years ago, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah. He learned from Buddy Rogers and, you know, and then him and Patterson. You know, that's what makes the business. People, when I started, they said, don't let him get to you. Make him pay to see it. Don't give him too much. I gave him everything I had, and that's why they paid to see me, because you entertained. If you hold off all the time, you screw the public.
You know,
that's how I think.
Yeah, yeah. The psychology, we talk about the business changing, and I think a lot of the younger guys I won't say they've lost track of the psychology, they just were never taught the psychology of milking the people and just giving them a little bit and making them come back and want more. And they go out there and give them, you know, now, as a manager, here's something that I find going around the independents and working with some of the managers is, they'll go out there and you'll see them. Here was just a few weeks ago, I was at a show, and this guy had a faction, right? And he had three wrestlers, and he went out in three different matches, and he bumped in all three matches. And I said, why are you doing that? He said, oh, I really like the bump. I said, that's not the point. The point is that why do you think Heenan or Cornette or Gary Hart or any of these guys got heat? And he said, well, because they were heel managers. I said, well, the point is, though, they made the people want to see them get bumped, and they milked them for everything it was worth. If they had gone out there and bumped the first night, then that's the satisfaction. That's the climax, right?
Sure. You know, if you do too much, you give them too much. And if you go to Indianapolis race and only see one crash every 10 years, but you see a crash every year, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean, I don't mean to make it sound that, I mean, sick, but that's what it is. People like to see bumps and crashes.
Right.
And if you give them to them all the time, the novelty wears off.
Exactly.
Right. We're talking about the guy, Bobby Heenan.
I've had seven very successful marriages, and I won't do it again.
You spaced them out so they didn't all come back to back.
Yeah.
Right?
We're talking about a guy who stretched out for 3 months the fact that a dog might bite him before he gave it to them.
Who, Bobby?
Bobby Heenan, yes.
I did what?
He's talking about a dog biting you.
When you were feuding with the British Bulldogs, and they had Matilda, and they stretched that out. Is that dog going to bite you for about 3 months?
Oh, yeah. I can barely remember what I had for breakfast or when Matilda bit me.
That's the other problem with too many bumps, right?
Too many dogs. Not enough rats.
So there's a story that when you were born, you had red hair.
Yep.
And then
I was operated a month later. I had porostenosis, which is a tumor in your stomach wall.
Ew.
And he took my hair off and he came back blonde. So, but my beard always was red. Now everything's gray.
Don't have to worry about bleaching anything anymore, right?
I still do it. I don't like to look old. I do, but I mean, I just don't like gray hair. I don't have good looking gray hair. Like, most guys have gray hair that's really white and shiny. Now, mine looks like Aunt B.
It's kind of bluish, huh?
Yeah.
Within in the last year, I forget exactly the time frame, but you and Cornette worked a Ring of Honor show, and I know for Jimmy, I talked to him beforehand, that he was excited, because he's a big mark for Bobby Heenan, and I know you guys must have had a great time during that show.
Oh, and I'm a big mark for him, too, because, you know, he's a manager that made sense. Whether you think, what makes sense in our business, but I mean, this guy, he never missed a word. He got every point across. He looked like he would be a manager. He looked like he would be wimpy. He had the cane, tennis racket. His mother was wealthy. He had polyester. He had glasses. I mean, this guy was just perfect. I mean, I really admire what Jim Crockett did and Cornette did in this business. I did that purposely, so you say that to piss him off.
So tell me about Nick Bockwinkel and your time managing him.
Nick is a wonderful guy. Nick knows more things than a man should know. And he can answer any question you have if he had that much life on this earth. Mm. But no, Nick was a very astute man when it came to his business. He always a second generation, his father, Warren Bockwinkel, and he wanted to protect the business. He loved wrestling. He loved holds. He loved taking bumps. He loved being the champion. And he was a true professional. Nick always did his homework, and he was a class act. He is a class act.
Yeah, and he never gets old, does he?
Pardon?
The son of a gun looks the same today as he did 30 years ago.
He looks like Lloyd Bridges on a box of condoms.
You know, probably most of the people listening to us tonight remember you mostly from WWF. But, I mean, you worked a lot of years in AWA. Of course, we're talking about where you started for Bruiser and Wilbur. And you worked around the country. Where are your fondest memories? I mean, never mind where you made the most money, but where did you have the most fun?
The most fun I had was in the AWA. We were driving in the cars. Let me take that back. The most fun I had was from 1972 until 79. I was living in Indianapolis. I worked there, then I went back to the AWA, but I still lived there, and my mother was still alive. I got married. I had a daughter. All my friends were there. I started making good money. Indianapolis popped. The territory was good. I was home every night. I was with all my friends. That was the most fun I've ever had in the business.
So you had the best of all the worlds, right? I mean, you had
oh,
family
I sure
around
did.
You.
And I also had the Kowalski sisters from Sheboygan. But you know the trouble was? They were Siamese twins, and every 6 months they had to go back to England so her sister could drive.
That's terrible.
Well, that's why. And then she broke up with me because her sister started fooling around.
Do you remember the Harem Club on Meridian, the Bruiser?
Are you kidding? Hey, that's where Calvin Pullins, Prince Pullins, was the bouncer at the door.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Calvin just passed away, too.
Who did?
Calvin Pullins.
Yes, that's what I mentioned that for. Yeah, I had my first match with him.
That's right. You know what? I think I remember that, because I remember you and I talking about it was in Indy.
At the Northside Armory.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And I think I remember that nervous Bobby Heenan that night.
Oh, I blew up during instructions. I was 20-some years old.
Wow. You know, that was, working for Dick was a trip in itself, wasn't it?
It was horrible. In the ring was horrible. And I really don't want to get into any of this because in the ring, he was like velvet. Outside the ring, I totally have no respect for the man, and I don't want to talk about him at all.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. It's a personal thing.
That's cool. It's your dime, yeah. My friend, and we will honor that and respect it, and we will move on and talk about the what was the name of the twins from Sheboygan?
One was named Ula, and the other one was named Upchuck.
Upchuck.
They were Eskimos.
We're talking about the good times. We've talked about some of the good times, but I know as a consummate professional, as a guy who went to work prepared to do the best job he knew how, that during the Monday Night Wars, a good portion of your time in WCW was pretty frustrating for you.
Well, you know, I came from a wrestling mentality.
Right.
And I always wanted to do everything, and I was taught by my first partner, Guy Mitchell, who you know very well.
Sure.
And Guy and Joe Tommaso, who was the assassins, but Guy told me once, the most rewarding business in the world, and it's the most frustrating, because sometimes you'll make more money than you ever thought, sometimes you won't get anything. And I worked hard to protect the business. And when I saw what they were doing there, and putting the belt on David Arquette, and the tag belts on Bagwell and his mother, and just things like that, boy, why go on? Why do you do anything? You can't do anything. I mentioned about helping out or doing something, and they said, well, you're just an announcer. That's all. So that's okay. So you lose all your desire to do anything.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
You know, in watching the show, and I could feel it too when you were biting. You know, you were wanting to say something sarcastic or off the
wall. Well, you know what it was? They didn't want me to be Bobby Heenan.
Yeah.
They thought if I made right of an angle, that I was making fun of it. But they didn't understand the character. That is Bobby Heenan. He doesn't care about anybody or anything. He doesn't care if somebody trips and falls. He'll go through their pocket while he picks them up to help them up.
Right.
That's the character. They never understood the business. That's why they're not in business.
Yeah, exactly. You're right.
Yep. Yeah. They wanted me to be more of a John Madden and just call it straight. People didn't want to see Bobby Heenan be straight.
No, absolutely not. And
now, you don't want to see anybody there. You don't see Cher come out and hum. You want to see her sing.
Right. Exactly.
So that's what it was.
Yeah, exactly. You know, talking about you as a commentator and having worked in that part of the business myself for a number of years, one of the things that when I go around and do the indies, you may notice this yourself, and I did an interview myself on somebody else's show a couple weeks ago, and they said, as a commentator, what's one of the a word of advice you'd give to young guys wanting to be commentators? I'd say, be entertained by watching the old Bobby Heenan tapes or watching Jerry Lawler, but don't try to be them because they are individuals unto themselves. And the first job is, I think a lot of these kids think the first point is to be funny or glib, and that I don't think they understand the first point is actually to direct the people's eyes to the match and make them see what it is that's going on.
Well, you can't be funny unless it comes to you. It has to be a natural thing.
Right.
I mean, you can write down things for yourself, but if the spot that you're talking about on TV, wrestling is different than anything else at all. Baseball, you know, somebody's going to strike out this and that. Somebody's going to hit a ball. But in wrestling, you never know who's going to do something stupid or who's going to do something great. So anything you would write down may not fit that time. So it has to be done with spontaneity off the top of your head.
Right.
And it's nothing you can really teach anybody. You either have it or you don't. I was lucky enough to have that. I don't have the ability to call a baseball game or play hockey or be an astronaut, but I can do that. And that's just basically what it boils down to.
Oh, I don't know about you being an astronaut. I think you could be an astronaut.
Well, my mother told me that. She says, I remember when you went to school, they said all you did was take up space.
You know, before we went on the air tonight, Doc was saying to me, he said, I think Bobby's I've got the Dodgers and the Reds on my TV, but he said, I think Bobby's a Reds fan. I said, nah, he was raised in Chicago. He's probably either a Cubs or a White Sox fan, so clear that up for us.
Well, I'm a Cubs fan because I lived down the street from the Cubs when I was a kid.
Right.
I'm also a White Sox fan because Eddie Einhorn, one of the owners, is a friend of mine, but I'm also a Cincinnati fan with my friend Marty Brenneman, who's a good friend of mine.
Right.
And I live in Tampa. And I've been watching the Devil Race so long, I'm about to throw up looking at their uniforms. So I think what I'm going to basically do is go to women's roller derby.
Awesome.
You're a friend with Steinbrenner, too, right? So the Yankees play into this.
Yeah. Well, you know, George is a friend of mine, but we don't go out to lunch a lot.
Gosh, I can say that I know Bobby Heenan, who knows George Steinbrenner, and Mario. You know, so Brenneman's a big wrestling. He and Joe Nuxall both are big wrestling fans.
Yeah, and Joe's a good guy. Joe told me a heck of a joke, but I can't tell it because... I'll tell him. He says, "Do you know how you turn a fox into a pig?"
How?
Mirror.
Oh, that's all kinds of wrong, Mr. Heenan.
How many guys, Bobby? I mean, you've managed so many top guys, but total, how many guys in the years you've been in the business have you managed? Do you have any idea?
Oh, wow.
I think around 40 or 50.
Wow.
That shows you right now there's 40-some guys that can't find work. You know, I was very lucky because I managed, I was in the area where it worked out great, because how many guys can say they managed Harley Race or Ric Flair or Nick Bockwinkel or Ray Stevens, Andre the Giant, John Studd, Mr. Perfect, Rick Rude, Ernie Ladd. I mean, I was just in the right place at the right time.
It's a shame you had to manage all those secondary guys, right? You couldn't get any top guys to work with.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, you know that. I mean, you know, when guys say you and I come through the same era, and guys will say who is the best to work with, and I've got to say, basically, as far as wrestling guys, the same as you do about man. I mean, during our era, there were so many top talents that just being a part of it was an honor, I think.
Yeah, and you know, everybody was different.
Yeah,
and you know, like Bob Ellis. Great guy, drew a lot of money, couldn't do a lot of things.
Right.
Then you get some guys that can do everything in that ring, couldn't draw you a dime. So it was just a whole different era. It was just a whole different life. And the people that are in it now will never understand that, and the people that we were in with the rest will never understand that unless they just say, hey, have fun with it. I have no sour grapes about anything. Except the Lebowski sisters going back to England.
Right. In 83, you had your neck broken in a match in Japan. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. You ever seen that where Hogan drops that leg on you?
Right.
I was in a match, and a Japanese guy named Onita came off the top rope, and he dropped it, but he landed in my face and took my head to the left.
Ooh.
And I thought I'd pinched a nerve. And it bothered me all those years. And when I finally left World Wrestling Federation in 94, I went and I signed up with WCW. And then I had insurance because now I was considered an announcer, not talent as a wrestler. So I was eligible for insurance. So then I went and had an MRI. And a spinal tap and everything, and they found out that I broke my neck, and they took two bones out of my hip and fused it into my neck.
Ooh, wow. You waited 12 years to get this?
I had no insurance. I had no insurance.
Wow.
And I couldn't take the time off. I had a daughter to feed and a wife to feed and a home, and I could have taken off. But, I have money. It's not that. It's just that I don't want to spend it.
Right.
I don't think I have to, because, I just worked through it. It wasn't as painful as it makes it sound. It was just, there was numbness in my fingers, and I had trouble sleeping at night. But other than that, the operation, where I was in there on the table 7.5 hours, and so the operation probably would have cost close to $100,000.
Wow. Wow. Ooh. You know what you were saying too about you couldn't take the time off, you had a wife and your daughter to feed. And I was talking to Doc earlier tonight. He was mentioning one of the wrestlers due to personal issues or something is taking some time off. And I said, we all talk about the battering that your body takes, but the fans can't possibly know the battering that your mind takes, the stress and the pressure due to the politics and the just fighting to stay, keep your spot, as it were, and they can't possibly know what a toll that takes on a person.
You know, Tony Kubek, who used to play for the Yankees, was a shortstop. And I was at a banquet with him one night, and I said, when he got hit in the throat and he lost his career, I said, how can you even go to DL? He said, you can't, because there's a guy waiting on the bench and wants to take your spot. He said, but nowadays, they're paying guys so much money, you can go on the DL, the disabled list, because your spot's going to be saved. Well, in wrestling, if you've missed a week or two of TV, someone's got your spot. You're done.
Right.
Yep.
And that's it.
So I got to ask you, Bobby, WrestleMania 3.
I never touched Moore. That was a rip. You can't believe me.
But you and Mae Young were an item.
Huh?
Huh? I said, but you and Mae Young were an item.
Well, I mean, we were just at one time. That doesn't mean there's lipstick on my shorts, but it doesn't mean anything.
So I got to ask you, WrestleMania 3, you and Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan, biggest WWF crowd ever. Tell me about that night.
You know, it was a funny night because I went out earlier with Hercules Hernandez, and I went out with Harley.
Right.
And then I went up to the booth, and I did a match with Bob Uecker and Jesse and Monsoon. And then I went down for the main event with Andre. But, you know, all the time going up, nothing hit me. But when I went out there with Andre, and we started out in the cart, I never thought about the history of what was going on right there. I thought to myself, there are millions and millions of people watching this all over the world. I guess I did think about the history, but I didn't mean about the Pontiac Dome.
Right.
But I said, my God, this is part of history that may never be repeated again. And I wasn't even thinking about the 90-some thousand people in there. And when I got to the ring, I just went into character and didn't think anything more about it.
Wow.
But it was something when you find out later on what the house was, how many people were there. And, I was in WrestleMania 1, and there was so much history. It was just great to be there.
Yeah, you know, you just mentioned Monsoon, and I didn't know Gino well, but I know that you and him became very close, and part of you guys being a good broadcast team was the chemistry you had as friends.
Oh, my God. We never wrote anything down. We just got along. We could laugh at each other, and he'd say one word, and I could take off on it, and back and forth. It was that one special time in someone's life when they have a friend, and he was my friend, and we laughed, we talked, we never argued. The last night on Raw, when I was leaving, Vince says, how do you want to leave? I said, well, have Monsoon throw me out. So he threw me out the door that night, and I walked around the bus, and he was waiting there. We got in the car, and we went down to the airport at LaGuardia, New York. We did it in White Plains, New York. We went to the Marriott, and we parked the car, and we walked in, and we got in the elevator, never said a word yet. And White Plains from LaGuardia is only about a half-hour ride. And then we got in the elevator, we went up to our floor, and I said goodnight. He said goodnight. I said, I'll talk to you later. I went to my room, and somebody had brought me, and he sent it to me, I know he did, a basket of fruit with pears and bananas and everything.
Aww.
So I called him. I said, hey, you big ape. I said, I got some bananas here. You want a banana? He said, yeah. I said, I'll meet you at the elevator. So I brought the bananas down, and I gave them, and we hugged each other and cried for a half hour by the elevator. He was my best friend I'd ever had in the business.
Yeah, that's the emotion, I think. And there again, we touch so many people, and so many people touch our lives in the years that we've been doing this. 46 for me, 43 for you. I don't think they realize, the attachments sometimes that, we're talking about guys we broke it back in 63. Pullins is gone. Dick's gone. Will, Les Ruffin, but all those people had ties and touched our careers, and whether it be a big part or a little part, but they all were part of us getting to wherever it was we went.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-oh. Did we lose Bobby again?
His wife turned the phone off again.
I think she did. She's like, Bobby, that's enough. You've been on that phone like a teenager.
Bobby, can you hear us? That damn Florida phone call.
That's not good.
You there?
Yeah, let's go ahead and take a break and try to get back with Bobby. I did hear a click a little bit earlier, but I thought it was on my end, so maybe he got disconnected from us. So, guys, stick around. We're going to have more with Bobby Heenan right after this. You're listening to Doc Young and Les Thatcher on Wrestling Weekly.
It's like a pulse that refuses to die. After 4 years, the chants are as loud as ever. These three letters changed history.
This ain't WCW.
Revolutionized sports entertainment.
This ain't Monday Night Raw.
And brought the wrestling world to its knees.
Oh my God!
Tonight, the revolution is reborn. Welcome to the underground. Welcome to the cutting edge. Welcome to the extreme.
This, my friend, is ECW.
He considers himself God's gift to wrestling, and millions of his faithful agree. With nearly 4 hours of footage and exclusive commentary and matches, this DVD chronicles Daniel's rise from Chicago's Windy City Wrestling to the Asylum in Nashville, and finally to the top of TNA. TNA Home Video presents Heaven Sent, Hell Bound, The Best of Christopher Daniels. Available at most retailers and TNAWrestling.com.
Business Advances Web Hosting. With plans as low as $2.95 per month, you can get the professional web hosting solution that you need.
Visit www.businessadvances.com.
A total hosting solution at a fraction of the price.
Register today and we'll give you 100 free templates to get you started and even more freebies.
www.businessadvances.com. Simply business as usual.
Doc Young, Les Thatcher, back here with you, Wrestling Weekly. More with Bobby the Brain Heenan on Heenan Night here on Wrestling Weekly.
Doc, I know the people in the chat room have got a, you know, some of the listeners have got some questions for Bobby. We better give them a shot at this too.
Oh yeah,
sure, be glad to do that.
We've got a ton of questions. Let me scroll up and find them because we had so many. I was telling them, hold off on that for a little bit. We're going to talk about some stuff and. So let's go to Professor VNS. He has a question. He wants to know, Bobby, if you know a wrestler from Butternut, Wisconsin named Charles Midget Fisher.
No.
No, okay. Let's get to some more. Find another one here.
Doc has just learned to read, Bob, so we have to bear with him. He's got to see Dick run, see Jane run.
That's okay. I can speak Braille. Bump, 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 bump.
Big Daddy Cool says, hey, Doc, can you ask Bobby how the angle came up when Randy Savage was looking for the perfect partner?
That was created by Vince McMahon.
Cool. D-Ray says, if you were managing today, which wrestler would you want to manage and why?
Vince McMahon, he owns the company.
That's one way to do it. That's one way to do it.
That's one thing we learn over all the years is which side the bread's buttered on, right, Bob?
You ain't kidding.
Question for Bobby from Andy. You appeared on TNA saying that promotion was the future of wrestling. Do you believe that, and do you think the current TNA product is better than the current WWE product?
Well, you know, some people like spinach, some like jockage, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's whatever you feel. Obviously, WWE's been doing it a lot longer, and they have a rhythm down on how to do it. You know, they're both good TV shows, and they're both, they have very good stars. I think people are just more into using, talking to Vince and listening to his show and understanding that and getting involved in the program, because TNA doesn't have a great TV time. They need a better TV time. I mean, no, any wrestling show is good. There are different. You go to an Italian restaurant, you get 10 different Italian dishes. They all taste different, but they're all good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the competition's good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, don't you think, Bob, that's probably, if Vince had his way, he'd open up two or three more territories, because I think it kept him sharper, too, don't you?
Well, not if you own it.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, I think when he had competition before...
of course.
Yeah.
It makes you get off your butt more, and it makes you become more creative. And you start thinking more and start worrying more. That makes you come off the butt.
Oh, yeah. Rhode Island Red says, what was Jesse Ventura like back in the day, and were you surprised when he became governor?
Yeah, I was. Jesse Ventura was always a nice guy to meet. He called me when I was sick with cancer and wished me the best. He was the governor of Minnesota then. He didn't have to call me. I don't vote for him.
Right.
I was surprised he became governor because, you know, usually a governor is a crook, you know, or somebody that a politician is probably the worst human being in this world because they will be nice to a pedophile just to get a vote. That's how I feel about him.
they're better workers than anybody in our business, right?
Oh, my God. They're better than... I mean, they keep getting elected by the humanoids that vote for them. I mean, they're all out of work. They all have nothing. Let's vote for this guy. What's he got? Well, he's got a shirt on with cufflinks. He's got big diamond watches. He's got diamond rings. He lives up in Hyannisport. He's got a lot of money. We're broke. Let's give him a shot.
Yeah.
They don't make sense.
No.
Did Andre have any problem with jobbing to Hogan in the Silverdome?
No. Andre never had a problem with anybody except getting the last call.
Yeah, I heard Andre was a big drinker.
He's a big guy.
Yeah, there's trivia going around that he drank like 120 beers in one sitting.
He was there.
Wow.
Several. But then you understand something. In two sips out of a bottle, you only had 240 sips.
Right.
And he'd been doing it. It wasn't in like an hour. He'd been at the bar for the afternoon playing cribbage and just sitting there with friends. So, you know, where he came from, you know, when they nursed him, it's Morgan David. You know, it's wine.
Mm-hmm.
So.
The first time I ever made a trip with Andre, when he came into Charlotte, I picked him up and we went to Raleigh, worked Orton Arena, and we stopped. There was a 7-Eleven about three blocks from the fairgrounds, and we stopped and he got a case of beer. Now, it's 140 miles from Raleigh to Charlotte, and about 40 miles out, he was in the back. He leans and says, "Hey, boss," and I, "Yeah, Andre, can we make another beer stop?" And I said, "Excuse me." So he had killed that case, in that 100 miles. So.
Oh yeah, WrestleMania the morning of WrestleMania 3, my wife and I and him were downstairs, and he had an omelet and six bottles of wine, and took a case over with him.
Wow. He has one omelet, but six bottles of wine. That's great.
Well, you didn't want to blow his figure.
Yeah. Were you upset at all when you were managing in WWF and they moved you to the announce table?
Oh, no. I was tired of managing. My neck was hurting so bad. That was my deal with Vince in 91. And I was not going to manage anymore. I turned everything over to John Tolis, who took over for Kurt Hennig. I was assigned to just produced the interviews, and I did all the TV that they needed me to do. I did Madison Square Garden. I did all the pay-per-views. I did Wrestling Challenge. I did Primetime, and I did Raw and things like that. It was so much easier because no one touched me. I didn't have to take bumps.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot better, I think, to be behind the table, especially in my position. But
it's like a good divorce.
Yeah, you don't have to take them bumps anymore.
No.
What do you think about Ric Flair being thrown into thumbtacks, and do you think WWE has him doing too much? That's from Hollywood's Rock in the chat room.
Does it matter what I think? I never saw him thrown into thumbtacks. I don't know. If Rick wants to do it, do it.
Yeah.
They're paying him for it. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, because of the name Ric Flair, is that degrading the name Ric Flair? But we mean, when you put the deposit, when you put the check in the bank, they never ask you what you did to earn it.
Mm. Blazeman in the chat room says, which company do you tune into more on a weekly basis?
None. And that's not because I don't enjoy it. It's just because I get up early in the morning. I'm up around 5:30, 6 in the morning. I go to bed around 9.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't make it to Raw. I don't even make it to Sports Center. And so I don't really watch much of anything anymore. And it's not the reason it's not a good product. It's I don't know anybody on it. And that's the hard thing. If it was my friends, or if it was Ernie Ladd, Eddie Farhat the Sheik, if it was Von Raschke, they were still wrestling, and I had to leave the business because of something like my cancer, and they were still on there. Yeah, I'd watch them. But these people, I don't really know, and I don't know the storylines. And it's a different show. There's a market for it, but I just don't stay up for it.
Yeah, it's pretty much changed. Amon says, question for Bobby. Where is the weasel suit, really?
The weasel suit? I don't know where that is. The last time I wore it was in Milwaukee at the Milwaukee County Stadium against the Ultimate Warrior. And I don't know where the suit went after that.
Who came up with the weasel moniker?
My idea. The weasel name or the weasel suit? The weasel suit was my idea.
Well, the weasel name.
Crusher.
Crusher?
Yeah, he used to always say, when I catch the weasel around the ring post, pop goes the weasel. But he never could sing anything. And then Lord Alfred Hayes, when we worked a little angle, he started singing it with his British voice, and that's how it started. And anything will work if you react to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's another question from the chat room. It says, I know you greatly enjoyed primetime wrestling and working with Gorilla Monsoon. What did you think of the Tuesday Night Titans show, and did you enjoy being on that?
Tuesday Night Titans.
The talk show that Alfred and Vince.
Oh, yeah. That was okay, because no one picked me up or touched me. It was fine. I was still getting paid.
Oh,
Anytime you get paid and you don't get knocked down, it's fine.
Absolutely.
I'm married to an Italian woman. I get killed for nothing at home.
What are your thoughts on the war to settle the score?
What was that?
That was the MTV special precursor to WrestleMania 1.
You know, everybody's got so many names. The war to settle the score. American Bash. You know, this I can't remember all of that.
Was that, that was a hoax? Who was it? Doc Hogan and
Piper.
And Piper, yeah. That was...
I have no recollection of that. I remember I found a loose woman at the beach once. I thought it was the whore at the shore.
God. Do you know, VNS wants to know if you're familiar with John Cena.
No.
No.
I think he's very talented, heck of a talker, and a real nice guy, but I don't really know him that well. I've only met him a couple times.
He said if you were in the front row at a WWE show, would you boo him or cheer him?
I don't boo or cheer.
Yeah.
I would just be enjoying his talent.
Okay, can...
Bobby, I don't know if... The reason they're asking is over the last few months, Hina, of course, is a baby... Or is, you know, pushed as a baby face. But it goes back to our era where the good-looking baby face is the wife and the daughter and the young kids cheer him and the husband or the boyfriend who is jealous boos him. I think that's the basis of it.
The Elvis syndrome.
Yeah, there you go.
When I am in the ring in Minneapolis, and there's a six-man tag. There's Stevens, Patterson, and myself. We all have on blue trunks, blonde hair, and a tan. Across the ring is Vern Gagne, Baron Von Raschke, and Mad Dog. Not one of them have a hair on their head. They're snow white, and the people want them to kill us. And I'm thinking, what if someone just got out of prison and walked in here and said, those three guys look pretty nice. Why are the people cheering those ghouls?
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell with this business.
No,
you never
can't.
Know.
And don't you? Well, it's like with Bruiser. He was such a strong heel is when actually the fans turned him babyface. He was stronger as a babyface.
Oh, yeah. Plus, he owned it.
Yeah.
And never leaving your feet is another good thing.
You know, we're talking about some brilliant minds in the business. Barnett. There was a guy that... pushed a lot of buttons, but he was sharp. He was sharp. I mean, he's...
What Barnett's gift was, he knew TV people.
Right.
And Barnett had a heck of a TV mind for what went on TV. And he also liked the look of different athletes. And he was never really wrong. You know, I asked him once, who did you make the most money with? I would have thought Bruiser and Ellis. He told me Bruiser and UConn Harris.
Wow.
That's what he told me.
Were you
I thought Jim would have been dancing on a grease pole someplace in El Segundo.
Were you ever involved in any riots, or were you in a position where you were worried about rioting happening?
Oh, yeah. I was at a family reunion 2 weeks ago. So I was in Chicago, and they shot at me and shot five people.
Really?
In 73 at the amphitheater. It was Bachwinkle against Gagne. And the finish was Nick Pinsburn, 1-2, but Vern puts his foot over 3.
Mm-hmm.
We think we won it. I jump on the apron. Nick jumps up. We hug each other. Vern drop kicks Nick in the back. Club sandwich. Nick goes down. I go to the floor. Vern covers him 1-2-3. Once I jumped up, I hear pop, pop.
Oh, my God.
But bullets don't sound like on TV like they really do.
Right.
And I don't know what happened. Usually in those days, most of the people in the place were beating the heck out of each other anyway. It was a rough building.
Right.
We got back to the dressing room, and Ray Stevens came out of the dressing room. He said, you guys all right? I said, what do you mean? He said, they just brought back five people shot. And there was a woman on the table with a hole in her chest, not her chest, in her arm, in her shoulder. And there was another person was shot in the thumb. And what he did, the article was in the Chicago Tribune from 1973 or so. And when I jumped on the apron, it was an African-American in a big man, like 250 pounds, in a fur coat. And when I jumped up, he said, I'll get him down. And he rested his hand on the person in front of him, and he shot down at me. But he didn't get to the ring. He shot the people at ringside.
Oh, my God.
And the person that gave the article, that gave the interview, the interview says, all I saw was orange. And the person, I guess, went deaf from that.
Wow.
And they never did catch the guy.
You know, talking about the deal in Chicago and this, it just set off, triggered a memory in my mind, and I know you... remember the night in the guy in the balcony at in Indianapolis that died? I forget what the match was, but they brought him down in the dressing room.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was because the match was so bad or so good. I'm not...
they arrayed him there, and there was a guy interviewing me that night. And he said, what do you think of that happening? I said, this is one worst person to throw something at me.
What happened to that guy, Les?
Well, died.
He got excited. He got into the match and had a heart attack.
Wow.
I guess that wasn't even the main event. So think of the guy, if the main event would have been, then the guy probably would have exploded.
Yeah.
I mean, when you can die during a third match, there's something wrong. When you're watching battling Benny Charles, there's something wrong.
You know, we're talking about riots and stuff, and that's something these young guys today don't understand either, Bobby, because, you know, with most fans realizing that, you know, it's predetermined and it's a show. They don't have that same heat, that same intense heat that we had years ago.
Well, that's because of, like, magic. If Houdini told everybody how he did his tricks, no one would care. Once you tell somebody how you do your tricks, the suspense is over.
Right.
It's like, I know she's a hooker, but is it 10 or 20? You know, there's mystique to everything.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Baseball, they hide the signals and the signs. I mean, everything's a secret.
True.
So.
Wow.
And, of course, these guys, when they ask about riots and stuff, they don't understand, talk about an adrenaline rush.
Oh, well, don't forget, in those days, we didn't have protection like that. We only had 3 or 4 cops.
Right.
And they made $6 a night. They were just there to make their money. They didn't care about us. They didn't care about anything. Some places like Elkhart, Indiana had great police. Indianapolis had great police. Madison Square Garden. Chicago had rent-a-cops, so people don't respect them. I mean, every place was different, and you had to know how to control your heat.
Yeah.
And
St. Louis, I was the first manager ever in the history of St. Louis, and they had 3 cops. And it was a long walk to the ring in St. Louis.
Right.
It was like walking to Kansas City.
That's
crazy.
And the other thing is there were no restraining walls or barriers.
Oh, no, there were no barricades in those days. None at all.
Wow. D-Ray says, how did it feel to return to WrestleMania in 2001 at WrestleMania 17 after you'd been away for 7 years? And how did it feel to reunite with Mean Gene Okerlund?
Oh, I talked to Gene all the time. He was about 50 miles down the road from me, and it was fun working with him again. It was really fun being with something professional after being all that time at WCW, which is, you know, they had the talent, they had the money, they had everything, but they just didn't know how to put it all together. But to be with Gene was and to be at WrestleMania and see all the old guys and all the young guys, it was fun. It was really good.
King Booker's peasant says, Bobby, what are your thoughts on Mr. Perfect?
Oh, I miss him tremendously. I knew him since he was a child. In 1967, I was in the AWA managing Harley Race because Larry Hennig had tore his knee. I remember going to the house, and Kurt was a young kid. A young boy. I watched him grow up in the business. I watched him grow up as a young man. It's a horrible tragedy. It was a horrible tragedy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the dumbest thing people can ask. What do you think about Kurt Hennig? Oh, I'm glad he's dead. We celebrate every Thursday. I mean, really,
yeah,
what are
yeah,
stupid
what
things
mean.
People ask?
Yeah.
Stop asking those things, people. Go get a bottle and get your wife.
Here's another question for the chat room. Did your release from WCW surprise you? And what did you think a year later when Vince bought the company?
Oh, I knew it was going down the toilet because there were people in our organization that were transferred to different parts of Turner Broadcasting. And I knew as soon as AOL took over and everything, they weren't going to keep wrestling on as long as Ted wasn't there. There was nobody in charge. No one could run the place. And I knew Vince took over because he bought the library. He's got all their films. He's got every match. He didn't buy it because he wanted to see the Disco Inferno.
Right.
You know, my contact with down there was not very long. When I hired on, they were trying to set up a developmental, another developmental system like WWF had at the time. But I was so amazed at my trips down there to do business, and all these good minds, wrestling minds, in the office, and yet none of them were allowed to be involved in the wrestling. I mean,
I guess they just you had somebody in charge that really didn't know the business,
right?
Like I just said, I couldn't do hockey, I couldn't do anything else but what I do. These people didn't know what they were doing. That's what, as simple as it is.
Blazeman says, of all the talents that you've managed, who do you think deserves to be in the Hall of Fame that isn't there yet?
Frank Hickey.
Spaceman.
Yes.
Yes.
I think of all the people I managed, my goodness, most of them are there.
Yeah, there are quite a lot of guys that you manage still in the Hall of Fame today.
Angelo Poffo? Yeah. He worked hard all his life in this business.
Yeah, Angelo.
And make sure
his
kids always had a job, and he worked hard. Eddie Farhat, the Sheik, the greatest heel ever in this business.
Well, that's
great name. Yeah.
Yeah, he. Well,
you know why he was such a great heel? He drew more money than anybody. Never did an interview. And he never took a bump. People say, well, he doesn't take bumps. If he had taken bumps, he'd have been another wrestler. You paid to see what this man was going to do. Was he going to set the building on fire? Was he going to cut your head off? You never knew. He scared people. He was the best heel the business ever had.
They believed in him, didn't they, Bob?
Boy, I did. And I knew him.
The main ingredient says, question for Bobby, did any of the wrestlers get mad at your comments when you were calling a match for them?
Yeah. One guy, Sid Vicious. I said one time, he's not the sharpest fork in the drawer. And he came up to me and said, Mr. Heenan, don't say that anymore. I'm not a stupid person. What he didn't understand is, it's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. Right. I made myself look stupid doing it.
Right.
You see, we're dealing with somebody that has an ego and didn't listen or understand what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But that was about it.
But, yeah, there was a lot of things. Do you think that, like, some of the comments that you used to make in the past on commentary and stuff, do you think that announcers today would be able to get away with some of the things that you said?
Oh, well, the people I said things about knew me.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew I never meant anything.
All right.
I mean, those guys, my God, without them, I would have been nothing.
Mm-hmm.
See, here's another thing, Doc. Bobby said made a comment earlier, and that's the key to the whole change. We're talking about changing the business from our time to current, too, is that as commentators, we didn't have somebody in our ear telling us what to say. It had to be instinctive. You had to play off of what was in front of you.
You're damn right.
And be able to build off of it. And today, you're not allowed to have a mind of your own.
No, you can't see. It's different, I guess. I haven't done it for a while, but no, it is different. And it's not that good.
Well, that's, you know, Bobby, I talk on this show all the time. It comes back to, and I said, you know, the simplicity of allowing Bobby Heenan to be Bobby Heenan and you know, or Dusty Rhodes to be Dusty Rhodes, or Flair, or whoever to be. It comes across as more realistic, and our job is still to pull the guys in, pull the fans in, and suspend their disbelief. Last night on Raw, Flair and Foley got in each other's face and cut this tremendous promo, and it was that kind of heat. You could hear the people just buzzing. It wasn't loud, but you know what I'm talking about. Where,
sure,
like, they're thinking, are they really mad at each other?
And they're paying attention and they're buying it.
Exactly. Thank you, sir. You're absolutely right. That is becoming a lost art because of writers. Right. You can't script Bobby Heenan. You can't script Terry Funk. You can't script the guys who know how to cut a promo.
You can strip me, but not strip me.
Yes, there you go. Well, that's been done so often. Right.
Right.
No, but you can't because, you know, you probably could have scripted me at the beginning. But we've done interviews, you had 2 minutes to talk about Chicago, your wrestling show off.
Right.
So that's what you do. You do it every week, you do it every year, every month. And then after a while, well, here we have a script. Wait a minute, I'm not used to doing this. It can't be done. You can't take an actor that studied and take them to do a 2-minute interview. They don't know what the hell to do.
Yeah. I think they try to, they see something. These kids that are doing the writing now who don't have wrestling backgrounds, they see something happen. They don't understand that it's something that happened. It was spontaneous, and then they try to recreate it and get frustrated when they can't. But one of the examples that I've used on this show, too, is the beginning of Monday Night Football with Howard Cosell and Meredith. ABC tried to duplicate that particular chemistry for how many years and never could do it?
Can't do it.
No.
And another thing, you can't be anything but yourself.
Right.
If you try to be another way, it don't work. And people can tell right away.
Absolutely, so. Yeah. Another question from the chat room. Big Papa Pump says, how did the break of the Steiner brothers come about in WCW? And what are your thoughts on Scott Steiner?
Oh, I like Scott. I like Rick Steiner. They're great guys. I don't know how this book came about. They never told us announcers anything. We never do anything. We showed up there, and we went out there, and Tony would put his head down between breaks and go to sleep, and Tanae and I would laugh. And then at 11 o'clock, we run out of the building and get back to the hotel to go home.
Yeah.
There was no preparation. They had a production meeting, and they'd have you come in, and they'd read you what was going on for the hour. Mm-hmm. But then that would all change. And that was it. It was ridiculous. It was a bunch of people playing office.
Right. VNS says, do you think WWF missed the boat by not bringing in Bruiser Brody?
Bruiser Brody, I couldn't stand the sight of.
Really?
Yeah, he wasn't my kind of human being. He would miss shots. He'd walk out if the money wasn't right. He doesn't realize when you're a top man, you got guys underneath that depend on those shows sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And when you walk out, the worst thing to kill this business is substitutions. And the next time, the people are not going to be back. So that guy that works underneath that is used to getting $20 or $25, now he may get a chance to get $50 because Brody's over. and Brody Screws, the promoter, but he's screwing all the boys in the card. That's why I don't like him.
Ross Sewage says, did you enjoy your appearances with Ring of Honor last year? And how did how did they come about? And what do you think of them as an organization?
I think they're good. They're always nice to me. They paid me. And I did interviews. Pardon?
That's always good.
Yeah. And that's what all us hookers think about, you know. I mean, think about it. We're all trickies, and Vince is the pimp in the big car.
Yeah.
And, no, they were very nice to me, and they do very good on their videos, and they sell, and they were always classy to me.
WrestleFan says, can you tell us what it was like to work with Roddy Piper, and do you have any good stories about him?
Oh, Piper was a professional. Roddy has to do things his way, and you can't produce Roddy, really, because Roddy knows it'll get Roddy over, and he's no problem at all. Piper stories? Nah, not really, because we never traveled that much together. He was always with Orton, and I wasn't with the boys that much in the WWE in those days. I was always with Monsoon or the television people, because I always had different things to do. But Piper is a true professional.
Vinny says, what do you think about Bruno Sammartino refusing to be in the Hall of Fame?
He has a right.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what his personal problems are with Vince or what's going on. And that's a great thing, is when you don't know what's going on. Because everything you hear, whether it's true or false, is exciting. If you know what's going on, it's not that much fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, another thing, it's none of my business.
Right.
I don't care. I don't care if Bruno gets inducted into the Pizza Hall of Fame. You know, I really don't care. And I like Bruno.
Yeah.
And I like Vince.
D-Ray says, what's the best WrestleMania that you've been in?
Oh, WrestleMania 3.
Oh, yeah.
I judge it by the money.
Oh, yeah. Amon says, on the Warrior DVD, you told a story about Andre punching Warrior. Did Warrior ever respond to the incident? I'm gonna guess no.
The last time you swung a net off your balls, did they come back and bite you?
Oh, Lord God.
Gentlemen, I'll leave you with that. I got to get to bed.
All right, Mr. Heenan, I want to thank you for being on the
show. No more Mr. Heenan, it's Bobby.
Bobby Heenan, thank you for being on Heenan Night, because we couldn't have had it without you.
Well, I'm sure you could have, and just lied to people.
Yeah, that's true.
I've done that for 40 years.
Bobby, my friend, it's always a pleasure. God bless you.
Wes, you're one of the most talented guys I've ever seen in the ring, and a true gentleman, I love you. Anybody that has anything to do with Wes Thatcher Promotions, get involved, because he's a good guy.
Thank you, my friend. That means a lot to me, and you take care of yourself, and stay in touch, please.
I will, and you owe me $40 for that pizza in Philly.
All right.
I'll see you guys.
Take care, Bobby.
Bye, Bobby.
Thanks so much.
Honey, who the hell was that on the phone?
Oh, Bobby Heenan here on Wrestling Weekly, guys. Les, let's take a break, and when we come back, we've got some more news to get to, of course, and we're going to wrap things up. Don't forget, of course, ECW coming up in just a little bit. We're going to go over the preview for that show
right. And
get some news out of the way. So
we'll
be back right after this, guys. Stick around. You're listening to Doc Young and Les Thatcher.
So many of these wrestling websites nowadays strongly promote their pay-per-view play-by-plays as if they were something unbelievably special. The problem is that they are not special. In fact, they're all the same. Nothing separates one from the other, and if you've seen one, you've seen them all. However, there is one site that has original play-by-play that's different from all the rest. 4WWrestling.com, a proud supporter of the Voice of Wrestling radio show, invites you to witness the ultimate play-by-play experience, live during every WWE pay-per-view. And if you're asking what makes them so different, well, 4W-Wrestling.com is the only site to put up pictures from the actual pay-per-view as it happens. You see what's taking place on the pay-per-view instead of just reading about it. If you're not buying a pay-per-view, but you're looking for the next best thing, 4W-Wrestling.com. Online wrestling evolved.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? Do you absolutely have to know all about their history? You, my friend, aren't just passionate.
You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, but an obsession, check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
Hi, my name is Adam Newdelman, but I play the Phantom on the radio. I'm here to remind you that, oh, screw that, my book, Mysteries of Wrestling South, is available at finer bookstores everywhere. That stupid fake voice, I hate it. I wrote a book along with Sir Adam Kleinberg called Mysteries of Wrestling. It has the questions that you wanted answered. Why does Steve Austin hate Jeff Jarrett? Are referees really blind and stupid and dumb? Who is actually the toughest wrestler in the business outside of the ring? Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kamala. We get down and dirty with insider facts you've never read about anywhere else. So what are you waiting for? It makes a great stocking stuffer. You're too short, you buy three of them, you get tall, you just stand on them. Mysteries of Wrestling Solved by ECW Press, written by Sir Adam Kleinberg and Adam the Phantom Newdelman, available everywhere. It's done. The plug is done. I'm done. I didn't sell it well enough. There's naked pictures of China in there. Okay? Thank you.
News and information on total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip is just one click away. Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, the best of Raven, Enigma, the best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, the best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back with you at Wrestling Weekly. Well, I hope you guys have enjoyed Heenan Night so far here on Wrestling Weekly.
You know what? I have.
I have too.
You know, I mean, seriously, for me, it's a heck of a walk down memory lane, because like I say, Bobby was working at the Ford dealership and carrying jackets, and I didn't say any, but I used to. I mean, when I say that, I say it in it's riving and joking. I say, hey, you know, this guy used to carry my jacket, and had I known he was going to be so great, I'd have carried his. Well, and I would carry it now. I have that much respect for him because he was a tremendous manager. But, you know, and stop to think, a lot of the guys that he and I worked with over there in the early 60s are gone, man.
Yeah.
You know, and not to wear the last of the Mohicans necessarily, but, you know, but Bruiser and Moose Cholak and Wilbur Snyder have all passed away. And but it was a magical time because we were kids, and you know, as we talk about money and getting paid now, but back then it wasn't about that.
Yeah.
You know, it was about give me a ring and let me work, and as I said to you on the break, you know, I broke in at 19, so in 63 when I met Bobby, it was early in the summer, I was just 22 years old. And I'd walk in a dressing room and say, hey, you're working with the Sheik, you're working with the Bruiser, you're with Fritz Von Erich or Angelo Poppo or Art Nelson or whoever it happened to be. These were guys that I'd bought tickets to see.
Right.
You know, and I thought, okay, I'll pay you. Right?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, but
more
it was
innocent.
Yeah, it was, and you know, it was entertaining, and they were characters. And as I mentioned to you on the break, one night I heard this early in the evening before they let the crowd in, I heard a motorcycle, and I said to one of the guys in the dressing room, it sounds like that motorcycle is right in the building. And it was. The Bruiser had ridden his BSA into the Northside Armory, you know, and man, it was just, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, you know, I just wouldn't. It's just, it was a magical time. And Bobby, you know, again, watching that, and here's a, like I say, here was a kid that was, you know, washing cars or whatever it was at the Ford dealership and helping carry jackets, and he became one of the greatest managers ever. So, you know, it's really neat to watch that, you know, watch that unfold and watch the progression.
Mm-hmm. It is more innocent time when you first come in, isn't it?
Huh?
It's a more innocent time when you first come in.
Yeah, well, you know, and we'll see, there was so much, and we were talking about some, he mentioned, now if you go on Obsessed with Wrestling on the Brad site, and you'll see a lot of these names, but, you know, there were so many talented guys that we could have talked about that you'd never heard of.
Right.
Right? Or wouldn't say, who's that? And, what, you know, and then it wasn't necessarily that they were big stars, but the business was so deep, and guys who had great psychology and who knew how to manipulate a crowd. And it was just, well, like he was saying about all the great guys he managed, and I had a chance to wrestle that basically that same lineup too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, man, if you couldn't learn and at that point in time, it was because you were deaf, dumb, and blind.
Right. There's a couple questions for you in the chat room that's
okay.
going on right now. I want to get to them before we get to the rest of the news. But the main ingredient says, what's your opinion on websites like WrestleCrack?
You know, I don't have – I mean, you know, if you can't laugh at yourself, you know, you can't be that stiff. I see the humor in our business. I see, you know, things that are funny. I don't – you know, it's everything's everything, – you know, I enjoy Don Rickles, and you guys, that's time dates me too, but I'm trying to think Dennis Miller,
mm-hmm.
right? I enjoy that type of sarcastic humor, and I see things in our business that are funny too, so I don't have a problem with WrestleCrap. There's everything's, you know, my father used to say, there's nothing ever so thin, there's not more than one side to it.
Right.
You know, meaning in his analogy was because of, well, you know, this is your opinion, but somebody else has an opinion that might be opposing to that, but at least there is another opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what I have a problem with is well, like me, I played a couple years of high school basketball, so now I'm going to be an expert and analyze the NBA.
Right.
That's where I have my problem, right? I'm looking forward to Gutman's book. Wrestling Sanity,
mm-hmm.
you know. I enjoy cutting humor. I really do. That's why I like Bruce Mitchell's columns and stuff. So I don't have a problem with it at all.
Rodon Red, I don't know why this came off. It just came out of left field. But he said, what do you think of the famous David Schultz, John Stossel 2020 incident?
I came up off the couch and said, yes, David, hit that S. Well, no, you know.
I knew you'd like that one.
Well, you know, here's the thing. The guy had been told, right? Don't ask me that again.
Right.
And to me, as dumb as I am, I would have been surprised. Okay, I'm not going to ask you that again.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, of course, you know, the sad thing is it cost David a lot of money.
Right.
Right. And he says to this day that he was told by. Well, see, here's the other thing. Dr. D wasn't a gimmick. That was David Schultz. I get along with David. He worked at Knoxville Territory. We spent a lot of time together there. If somebody did push that button, then they knew if they said, well, you know, if the guy gets cheeky with you, clobbering, he was going to do it.
Right.
You know? But, yeah, well, see, at the time, we were still protecting our business to the most degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
And on that same show when Eddie, damn it. The kid that demonstrated the blade, and God, I know him. I'm having a senior moment. I'm sorry. I was upset with that. A lot of guys were,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he laid low and stayed away from the business for a long time after that because somebody would have rung his bell.
Right.
You know, but, you know, that's the other thing. It's a different time now. I don't have a problem. You know, when I first did a radio show here in Cincinnati, I had a show for 2 years, a three-hour block on Wednesday nights called Wednesday Night Main Event on the Homer Clear Channel station here. And when I first started doing the show, it was, even though the cat had been out of the bag for quite a while, I was put in a position to publicly talk about angles and storylines and work rate and all that, and it was tough at first.
Right.
You know, because you are programmed. You, kayfabe, man, you were about protecting your business.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you got to realize that there were times that somebody would say something to you in a public and say, well, let's take it outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which, as I've said before, is not a great public relations move. You know,
but it's part of your job.
Yeah, exactly. It was. It was. So, you know, it's a changing time.
Do you think when Vader did that in Kuwait that it was staged?
I don't know. I can tell you real quick about times that they weren't. George, the Scott brothers, the Flying Scots, George and Sandy, Norfolk, Virginia. They were on a TV show and a talk show, a live talk show, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And the host, it was cool at first, and then the host got a little cheeky and like he was questioning things. Now, this is back in the '60s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when everything was strictly straight up, you know, as far as we were concerned about protecting the business. And he told George, he said, oh, that sleeper hold can't work. And George said, well, yeah, it can. Oh, no. Well, you want me to put it on you? Yeah, the guy said. So George put him out. And a lot of times, and this is how I've seen happen, you know, legitimately, you put somebody out there. Sometimes they lose control of their bodily functions. And this guy wet him. But anyway, George put him to sleep, sat him down in his host chair, and walked off the set.
Oh, man.
And there was still some time left on the clock for this show, and the producer was going nuts. And now, I wasn't there, but, you know, I was told. I mean, I'd worked the territory, but I wasn't there at the time. I didn't see it, but I know that was the talk of the territory, you know. But George proved his point, right? He proved his point.
Sure did.
Yeah. It was another time, but that was the way we tried to protect our business then.
Mm-hmm. You know, I got to say about the whole Hina night and everything. Sometimes, you know, wrestling gets frustrating. Sometimes the show is frustrating. Sometimes the whole, being around this whole thing just gets to you sometimes. But on a night like tonight, the night before my birthday and Hina night, it's stuff like this, being able to talk to, you know, a guy I respected and idolized when I grew up, it makes it all worthwhile.
You know what? Yeah, see, and I got you, that was my birthday present to you.
Yeah.
and you know what? When Joe Hamilton, we got some good guests coming up. Joe Hamilton, Davey Richards, who won the Super 8 and is working for Ring of Honor now.
Yeah,
I had the opportunity to work out with for 3 days down to Carolinas back in May, and I was very impressed with him.
He defeated Charlie Haas in that final.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kevin Kelly, who I worked with in developmental, is coming on. Cheerleader Melissa. We've got some good guests. Romeo Rosselli.
Romeo Rosselli, the heartthrob.
Heartthrobs, yes.
Yeah.
A bunch of good. But, you know, with Joe Hamilton, I met him in '63 in Charlotte when he and his partner Tom Ernesto were the Bolos. And went on to be the Assassins, and those guys have drawn money every place. I mean, they have, and we could have the same kind of great time with Joe, because he is, and George Adam Acropolis, who has been around the wrestling. I mean, she's on WrestlingFigs.com currently, but she's been around since fan clubs.
Yeah.
Which is the one thing I want to bring up and talk to her about, because there is no such thing any longer.
Yes, good guests on the way in August on Wrestling
Weekly,
guys.
Yeah, we
got
a bunch of good guests coming up.
Real quick, I want to put this out there for the Canadian fans. Of course, the Score has went and posted schedule for the month of August, and the program schedule for the station lists the ever so important third airtime for WWE Raw. Not only will Raw air on a 1 hour tape delay in Canada at 10 p.m. Eastern, with a Pacific Prime replay later that evening at 12:30 a.m. Eastern. But the following Tuesday, Raw is going to play midday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern. So this is going to be a constant replay in Canada. It's not going to be preempted. Three airtimes for WWE Raw now in Canada on the Score.
Wow.
And just a reminder that starting this week, SmackDown will now air on Friday nights at 8 p.m. with a 12 a.m. replay later that evening in the in Pacific Prime in Canada. Additionally, the Scores website is listing that the third airing of SmackDown will now be shown on Saturdays at 3:30 p.m. Eastern every week, which is an upgrade from the late-night replay time the show has been getting. So, the Score, printing out
Should I be writing all this down? No, since I don't live
no,
in Canada.
No, you don't live in Canada. This is for our Canadian friends.
Right, though, I know. And we have some.
Yes, we do. The Canadians love us. They love them some Wrestling Weekly.
I enjoyed wrestling both Coast, Eastern, and Western Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you breaking up on me now? What's going on?
I thought it was you that's breaking up.
Well, maybe this phone battery after all these this hours of listening to my friend Bobby is starting to burn out or something.
It's possible. But anyway, that's our cue anyway. We got to get going here. Don't forget to keep checking out the website at WrestlingWeekly.com to see what's coming up as far as guests for next week. Also, of course, check out LesThatcher.com and EPWT.com. Those are Les's websites, and you can learn all about...
Quick reminder, Dr. Tom and I in Denver, September 8 and 9. You can get more information on that at AltitudeProWrestling.com.
AltitudeProWrestling.com, yes. Also, don't forget to check out ObsessedWithWrestling.com. They get all the good stuff over there. We're going to be out of here right now. Enjoy, for all the East Coast fans, enjoy ECW. That's coming up next. Big Show versus Batista in the main event. So we will be out of here until next week, guys. You're listening to Doc Young and Les Thatcher on Wrestling Weekly. Have a good one.